Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Science and Religion Podcast. You're here with myself, Colin Turpin, my co-host, Seth Brown.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Welcome. We are so glad that you're here with us today.
Yeah.
Today is special week.
I don't know if they're ready for it, Colin.
I don't think we're ready for it.
We're certainly not.
As I'm sure you've inferred from the file which you have clicked on, today we are going to be talking about sexuality, and specifically sexuality as it relates to both science and religion.
Yes.
And so this is something that Seth and I have spent probably 2 weeks now thinking about, preparing about. It has been definitely our most challenging week, prepare for. This is something that, as a disclaimer before we get started, this is something that will have some adult terms. We're going to be doing it very scientifically, as we always do. But if you have children, little humans, anyone who might not want to, you know, learn terms, go ahead and turn it off. Listen to it later.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Sure. So with that out of the way, we're going to get started.
Well, and there's another disclaimer
that we have to make. Oh, yes, please, go ahead.
Here's the deal. Colin and I, we're really interested in learning more about this topic.
Absolutely.
Learning more, trying to understand better and better what's going on with homosexuality, transsexuality, the LGBTQ community. But we are two heterosexual males.
That's right.
That's our experience. That's where we're coming from. And so just know that up front, that we're talking about things that we haven't experienced. And does that disqualify us automatically? No. But just keep that in the back of your mind. If you hear something that we say and it sounds like we just don't understand, well, chances may be high that we don't actually understand.
Right. So how are we going to do this then? Well, we are going to go very broad, very quick. We're going to speed through this. Just briefly talking about, once again, the goal of this podcast is to bring to you where the conversation is.
Right.
For those who might not be in either the religious or the scientific community, we're gonna talk to you where we are at as a society on these topics. Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that will get you into a place where you understand better, because there's a lot of confusion and a lot of ignorance. And I think really that's a big part of the problem behind this whole conversation.
Yes.
It's just people don't know. And so that's what we're trying to do here. Hopefully we end up doing it. I believe we will.
I think so.
But stick with us and you'll find out. So, right. Colin, how are we breaking this up?
So, we're going to split today in half. The first half of this podcast, we're going to talk about homosexuality. And then, once we're done with that, we're going to move on to transgenderism. Okay, why these two things? Well, there are a lot of topics regarding sexuality that are very relevant, very worth talking about, but we thought in preparation these were kind of the two big issues, big controversies that we are having this conversation about.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna go over it and do our best and help point you in the direction so you can learn more about yourself.
So hey, let's start with homosexuality. Colin, I believe you might have some terms that will kind of help start the conversation for us.
Sure. So in thinking about homosexuality, we are specifically, I think a more clear term is same-sex attraction. So we are differentiating today between sexual attraction and sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So sexual attraction is dealing with when you, the partner, the soulmate, whatever you want to call it, the love of your life that you're looking for, who you are biologically, emotionally attracted to in other people, versus orientation, which we'll talk about later, is how you see yourself. Mm-hmm. When you look in the mirror and you say, "What am I?" That's, you know, from a sex male female point of view, that's sexual orientation. So we're going to start with our attraction, which is how we relate to others.
Yeah, well, and just a quick caveat there. I think you said male female. for your orientation. Some might say there's more.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot
yes.
of people would say there's more than
yes,
that. Actually,
I so. Don't. Yes, thank you for clarifying that. But once again, we're going to dive into that later.
Absolutely.
Don't spoil it. Yes. Yep. Thank you for that clarifying. So,
what's the why are science and religion even talking about these?
Why are we even talking? Why even bring it up?
Yeah, what does science and religion have to do with sexual attraction?
Great question.
And orientation.
I think this is one area that, as you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of ignorance, a lot of confusion about from all sides. Because mm-hmm. as we see, both of the religious and the scientific community are kind of coming at it from different points of view.
Mm-hmm.
And so within the religious community, you often hear this argument of morality, of is same-sex attraction good or bad? That's basically what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Is it something that should be good or it's something that should not be done? Science, on the other hand, is a little bit different. It looks specifically more as science does. It studies claims. It looks at testable things, provable things, the biology of it, the impact on individuals that it mm-hmm. has, how best to empower them, things like that. And so oftentimes when these two clash together or when you're engaging with someone of the other camp, you're often not even talking about the same thing.
Right.
And so that can lead to a very unfruitful conversation.
Mm-hmm. I think what you're getting at is the idea that science cannot provide us with a morality.
Right.
Science can give us guidance. It can give us information to kind of help us as we try to understand the morals behind this. But mm-hmm. in no way can science say, this is right, this is wrong. Science can say, this is a fact, this is not a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of what you're...
Yes, absolutely.
So that and so when people come to talk about this, sometimes they might hold science up and say, look, this is a morality. Or so with science, we can say, okay, maybe you're born this way, therefore it's a good thing.
Right.
Or maybe, which is not necessarily, it's not the case that you're not born that way. It's just not the case that science can give you that answer and saying it's good or
good
bad.
Good or bad. Right.
And in this, on the opposite side, religion might say, well, because you know, in the Bible it has these verses, we know that it's bad or whatever, religion can't say that it's a fact that people can't be born that way.
Right.
Or
Yeah.
I think that's where people are missing each other in the
exactly.
conversation.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. That's what we're missing. So, if we're talking about these different things, where is the conversation at right now? I'll let you go into that a little bit.
So that's, you got to look at the, again, because they're two different kind of camps. You got to look at what each, conversation, what the conversations are in each camp, and hopefully once you look at those, you might be able to come to a decision. But we're going to kind of look at these conversations separately. So, for example, in science, the conversation that's going on in science is I'm going to throw out this term that I think a lot of you might be familiar with, but it's the old nature versus nurture. That is what is the cause of same-sex attraction? Is it your nature? Is it the way that you were born? Is it your genetics? Is it biological? Or is it the way you were nurtured? Is it the way that you grew up, the family environment that you grew up in, where you kind of conditioned, in a sense, to be attracted to the same sex?
And I think it's important to note that this question of nature versus nurture is not just for homosexuality. We see this in all sorts of science. And something that I've learned is, whenever you have to ask this question, the answer is always both.
Mm-hmm.
It's always both. It is always part nature and part nurture. The question is, how much of each? What is the proportion of it?
Right.
And so that is something that is a scientific claim that science has been working hard and has had many controversial studies about.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't have a super clear answer on that, but it is something that is being talked about.
Absolutely. And I think you mentioned this as we were kind of preparing for it. There are studies out there that say that by age 13,
mm-hmm.
Most people know. They know if they are attracted to the same sex.
That's right.
It's an interesting fact. I actually didn't know that as we were preparing, but I think maybe that's important to remember as you're having these conversations, mm-hmm. that you know, around that age is when somebody will know that something's mm-hmm. different. Mm-hmm. And so being able to engage in these conversations with someone as young as 13 is it's important to keep that in mind. Mm-hmm.
And I think as I understand the biology side of this, is it goes down to epigenetics. I don't remember if we've talked about this
briefly did.
So essentially it is your biology, is your genes that are present physiologically, but are manifested or activated through environmental mm-hmm. situations. So in essence, like we said earlier, it's both nature and nurture.
Right.
And that's pretty clear in the scientific community. Mm-hmm. So if that's where science is at in dealing with, where is the religious side of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so like we kind of mentioned all along, the religious side is more dealing with the idea of, okay, is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Right.
And that's more within the church. And then there's also another side to this conversation, and that is, okay, whether it's right or wrong, how does the church or the religious community interact with the LGBT community?
Yes.
How do those interactions occur? Do we accept? Do we affirm? Do we deny? So on and so forth. But I want to talk real briefly about the question of right or wrong as it relates to Christianity.
Okay.
And the Bible specifically. So there are six kind of passages that are super controversial as it relates to homosexuality. There's three in the Old Testament, three in the New Testament, and so much of the conversation is centered around these verses. If you are speaking about homosexuality and you are either condemning or accepting without knowing what these six passages are, I would encourage you to learn these six passages and become very familiar with them. Because if you're speaking from a place where you don't know these passages, then maybe you shouldn't be speaking at all.
Mm. What are they?
What are they? I'll go through and talk about them real quick. Genesis 19 is the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. You may be familiar with that, but so Genesis 19, I don't want to get too much into the weeds here. There's some passages in Leviticus. There's one in Leviticus 18:22, one in Leviticus 20:13, and then there's three passages in the New Testament, which is the time after Christ kind of came. So they're all written by Paul the Apostle. One is in 1 Corinthians 6, verses 9 and 10. Another one is in 1 Timothy 1:10. And then the last one is in Romans 1, 26 to 27. So, I don't want to get it too deep into the question or into the weeds, but the general tone of these passages is negative towards homosexuality. That's just the fact. And so the challenge for those who want to affirm homosexuality is, how do we reinterpret these passages?
Sure.
How are we to understand these passages? And so the way that they most often do that is by looking at the culture to which these were written in.
And is the church united in their opinion of these passages?
Oh, gosh, no. There's so much division in the church about these passages. There's a lot of division.
Yeah.
Again, those are just to give you some ideas.
Yeah.
If the person who wants to affirm homosexuality needs to reinterpret these passages, that's what needs to happen. The person who wants to claim that homosexuality is a sin needs to look at these passages and understand why Paul was saying these things and be okay with why he was saying them. So those are the six main passages that deal with homosexuality in the Bible. And there's principles that we can infer from other passages. But,
sure. So what are some of the ways that churches act, their attitude, mm-hmm. their disposition towards the LGBTQ community?
Yeah.
What are some, like, the extremes?
Yeah, well, the two extremes are pretty obvious. There's total acceptance. Everything about the LGBT community is affirmed, is accepted. There are gay pastors, lesbian pastors that lead these churches. The church completely affirms. That's one
sure.
extreme.
Right.
On the other extreme is the... And if you have had experience with homosexuals, gays, you know that this other extreme is not a pleasant thing to talk about for them.
Right.
There's this term, it's called conversion therapies. Some call it pray the gay away, which I think I'm reading this book right now that talks about the results of these conversion therapies, and they all fail.
They're horrible.
They're terrible. Yeah. They're absolutely terrible. And so those are kind of the two extremes that are out there. The attempt to say
very damaging.
This is a terrible thing about you, and we need to absolutely change this.
Right, right.
Conversion therapy to the idea of there's nothing wrong about this. Please come in. Please come in.
Yes. So and everything in between.
And as well. Right, right. Everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's kind of how the church interacts with the LGBT community.
Yeah. So with that being said, so. Back up a little bit. Let's step back and take a look at this conversation as a total. We're going to kind of wrap up this section. Where are we as a society in talking about this?
Well, I think people are still very uncomfortable talking about it, which is sad. I think because of that, there's a lot of misunderstanding
and
confusion, like we mentioned earlier on. And I think at the root of that, ignorance and confusion is a lot of the problem. And I think if people took a big step back and really, well, not took a big step back, but actually took a big step in.
There we go.
Excuse me. And really got to know the arguments and the science. If people really cared or really wanted to know, they could. And I think one of the things I'd also like to say is that I really think people do want to know. They do want to love.
Absolutely.
Something you said as we were preparing, yes, you have your bigots and you have the people who hate the gay community. That's the reality. You're going to have that in any situation. That there's going to be people who are absolutely against it. But I would say that the majority of people want to love. They want to love. They just don't know how. They don't know how. They're not willing to take that first step. And so, again, that's why we're having this conversation and this podcast, is to let people in on the conversation and to get them thinking about this.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts?
Just basically the question of how to love well.
Yeah.
Because I think this idea of loving them, if it's coming from a point of, well, I'm loving them by telling them what they're doing is wrong, that may not look like love,
right?
You know, to other people. And so there's, this question of how do we interact with it? And me personally, from a psychology point of view, there's been a lot of study and work done of how to affirm members of the LGBT community and how to basically help them walk through this. Mm-hmm. That is a huge thing, and I think that is something worth pursuing by people in the scientific and religious community.
Absolutely.
Because no matter what you believe about it, about its morality, about its biology, these people are people.
Yeah.
And they, you know, depending on what you think of people, I guess, they are worth loving and caring about, and absolutely something that is worth pursuing this conversation for. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Okay, part one. We're done with that. We're moving on to second part,
which is
transsexuality, transgenderism.
Yes.
And all that embodies.
Everything with that.
I want to preface this section by saying it's easy to compare, even as we were talking before this, I kept trying to come up with questions, and it was always, how does transgenderism compare to homosexuality in this area? The truth is, they're very different things.
Yes.
They're very different things. And again, part of the ignorance surrounding transsexuality is that a lot of people think it's just like homosexuality, just like struggling with same-sex attraction. It's not. It's really not. So let's start with that. These things, even though they're in the same LGBT community, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, they're different things. They're really different things.
Very much so.
Let's start with that.
Okay.
And then I've got some definitions for us that, again, there's confusion and ignorance when people say cisgender. Some people scratch their heads when someone says the transsexual woman, transsexual male, like what's going on there?
Yeah.
So I'm just going to read some definitions from, these come from Stonewall website. Stonewall is an organization that is dedicated to bringing information about transsexual and LGBT community.
Sounds like a great resource.
Yeah. So cisgender or cis, so like a cis man or a cis woman, is someone whose gender identity is the same as the sex they were assigned at birth. So if I was a cis male, I identify as a male and I have the body parts that tell me I'm a male. So that's cisgender.
Okay.
There is a transgender man and transgender woman. A transgender man is a term used to describe someone who is assigned female at birth but identifies and lives as a man. So transgender man is someone who is assigned a female at birth and is becoming a man. Transgender woman is the opposite, someone who's assigned male at birth and is transitioning to a woman.
Okay.
And there's one more that I want to talk about. It's called gender dysphoria. Gender dysphoria is a term used to describe when a person experiences discomfort or distress because there is a mismatch between their sex assigned at birth and their gender identity. This is also the clinical diagnosis for someone who doesn't feel comfortable with the gender they were assigned at birth. So kind of a cognitive dissonance with who you are, who people are telling you that you should be, and who you feel you are.
Right, gender dysphoria. So I think you hear the phrase a lot of I feel like I am a woman trapped in my body, right? And so it's very much feeling, it's a very displeasant feeling. That word dysphoria means bad emotion, mm-hmm. right? It's very unpleasant. And so that, I think that's a good framework of some definitions, when talking about this. So, my next question is once again, what is the relevance? Why are we talking about it? Why is this worth talking about in science? Why is this talking mm-hmm. about in religion? In science, we are still learning about it.
Yeah.
To be honest, this is one of the newest, fields, I think, in science that we are still learning about biologically. Is understanding how these processes work. And there's been, I believe, quite an extensive amount of study now, but in the history of the human race, this is very recent that we're even talking about this. And so...
Well, because up until now, it wasn't possible to do anything about it.
Exactly.
Right? Yes. There's no way of, if you're a man, of becoming a woman, mm-hmm. other than the way you dressed and act.
Yes.
Acted. But with scientific advancement, technological uh-huh. advancement, these things are becoming possibilities.
Right.
And so that's, I think, maybe one of the reasons why we're starting to see this. And
yeah.
Another reason I want to give real quick before we continue on is... there's a lot of misunderstanding about transgenderism because only, what is it, 1 out of 200 people struggle or have these feelings.
Yes.
Whereas with homosexual tendencies or same-sex attraction, it's 1 out of 11.
9%.
So just by reality, transgenderism is much more rare. Right. And I think because of that, there's less study going on about it. There's more confusion. People just don't know because there's just not as many people.
It's not as prevalent. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. And also relevance within the scientific, and I think this applies to religious as well, is very much a political thing.
Oh,
I'm sure you've all heard in the news, recently in the past, even year, there's been lots of different political policy that affects real people and has real change. And so that's something worth talking about because it applies to real people and has very serious repercussions for those people.
Absolutely.
So that's, we'll dig into that a little bit later. The religious side, why do religious people care about this?
Well, I think religious people should care about this because the people who struggle with this are people. The people who have these feelings are people.
Yeah.
And so I think that's why, as Christians, we should care for these people.
Sure.
But as far as like what the Bible says about this,
sure.
What the conversation is, honestly, there's really not much out there.
Okay.
The Bible doesn't say a whole lot. There's no explicit verse in the Bible about transsexuality.
Okay.
That doesn't mean we can't infer principles from other verses in the Bible as to how we are to respond to transgenderism, transsexuality. But there is no explicit verse that you can point to and say, aha, this is, definitive answer is what we got.
Yeah.
So that being said, let's kind of move on to the conversations out there in science and religion, and I think it's gonna sound very similar to what we were just talking about. The conversations out there about science. Mm-hmm. What do we have, Colin?
So a lot of this, once again, we're not here to give you guys a biology lesson, but the biology I think is very vital to understanding the transsexual point of view, which is essentially everyone, when you are being born and when you're a little baby growing and developing, everyone, your sexual organs default to female. Everyone starts out being a female unless told otherwise. What tells us otherwise? Well, for us men, we get a Y chromosome in our DNA, and that says, hey, turn on the male sexual organs. And so that develops, and then you have male chromosomes and male sexual organs, and that I think there are some probably male wiring of the brain that goes on with that as well, that kind of gives you this sense of identity, of being male. And the females, likewise, they don't have that stuff that turns on. They develop female sexual organs, female wiring. They feel like a female. About one in every 200 times, as we mentioned, something atypically develops. I don't want to say that it's like a mistake or a horrible disaster, because that's mean. But it is very much atypical in the sense that in this development, you will either get multiple pairs of sexual organs or the wrong one. It will always go from, since you default to woman, it starts with men who either don't develop male sexual organs or things like that. They call this term intersex, which basically you have different wiring, you have different body parts than your genetic chromosomes would dictate. And so with that, this is, I believe, is the primary cause of that gender dysmorphia that we were talking about.
Dysphoria.
Dysphoria, thank you. I keep saying that wrong. Gender dysphoria, which is, I feel like I'm someone else trapped in my body, because there is parts of you that, you know, is not matched up in a typical point of view.
And I'd like to say something about this. Colin and I gave him a podcast to listen to a while back, and I've listened to it. And it's these two hosts interview a transgender woman. Okay, I got that right. And it's what was so interesting, one of the things that I found so interesting about this podcast, so it was a male transitioning to become a female. It's not like he wanted these feelings, right? It's not like he was actively seeking to have these feelings of being a female trapped in a male. He would cry out and just despair against these feelings that he had inside of him. And so
for like 30 years.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I say that to say it is an atypical thing, but some people may feel as if it's a terrible thing that's happening.
Sure.
And maybe they just don't know that this kind of thing happens.
Yeah.
And so I want to clarify that it's not like just because it's atypical doesn't mean that it's like, oh, you know, well, this is different about me and I'll just feel this way and it'll be good.
Right.
These are really hard things that these people are going through.
Yeah, I'm glad. And I think that is the normal case for transgender individuals. Obviously, I don't know, but I'd be willing to bet that gender dysphoria is a very prevalent thing within that.
Yeah, so. I mean, I would say these people, it's important to remember they're not seeking out these feelings.
Right.
Well, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I believe that that's the case. And if I'm wrong, hey, please correct me. I would love to be correct on that. But I don't imagine anyone seeking these feelings out.
And we're mentioning this so much just because there's, I think, this idea of, oh, I'm just going to choose to be a woman today. Exactly. Or I'm going to choose to be a man today. It's just not like that.
Exactly.
That's not how it happens.
Thank you.
That's not how it happens. So this is where science is. I think there's also an equal amount of study of empowerment for this group scientifically. What's the best way to handle transitions? Mm-hmm. I know that at least in Oklahoma, this is probably national policy, that individuals who want to undergo transition have to seek out a psychologist and a psychiatrist and both get their approval of mental health before making this transition. So it's not just like a willy-nilly thing. This is a very thoughtful, involved process that there's very much a scientific basis for. So that's kind of the science side. Let's talk a little bit about the religious community and how they handle it.
Okay. Sorry, I got to plug in my laptop. It's dying on me. So that's got Colin helping me out here. As far as the conversation on the religious side, I think to reiterate what I've mentioned is that there's really just a lot of we don't know.
Sure.
We don't necessarily know because the Bible's not explicit. We can certainly say, okay. So for example, one of the things that religious communities, people within the church point to is in Genesis, when God creates man, humankind, I should say, he creates them male and female.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as Christians, we believe that God has a purpose for doing everything. And so one could certainly say, if God creates everyone male and female, he creates them physically mm-hmm. as male and female for a reason.
Sure.
And not to disregard someone's feelings, but to say to God, I don't like the way you've created me, comes across, at least within the Christian community, as not pretentious, but just like not the right attitude.
Yeah.
Right. So that's one principle that you can kind of infer from, mm-hmm. from Scripture. There's a verse in Deuteronomy that says a man shouldn't dress like a woman and mm-hmm. a woman shouldn't dress like a man. And that's pretty much what the verse says.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to look at that verse in context of, for example, one of the explanations might be, well, the pagan community surrounding Israel were participating in these evil acts, sacrificing to false gods. And part of that ritual was cross-dressing.
Right.
And so maybe God was saying, don't imitate these cultures in this way. That's not necessarily saying cross-dressing is bad. It's just saying that you may start looking like this culture, and that's not a good thing.
Right. So once again, we're not the experts behind
right.
the Bible side as well. There's lots of other much more qualified people than us. But that's where the conversation is or should be.
Right.
Once again, it's almost non-existent. At least mm-hmm. I have not heard it brought up very much at all.
Right.
You know, officially, like from a pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm sure someone is talking about it.
Yeah.
So, where does that leave us?
Where does that leave us with transsexuality?
With transsexuality.
Transgenderism.
Where are we?
Well, to reiterate once again,
mm-hmm.
we are in very much, I say we, me personally.
Okay.
The church, the scientific community, in general, doesn't have a good grasp of what's going on.
Yeah.
That's not to say there's no grasp at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot more progress to be made in understanding the causes behind this. And so until we've had more information, until we've heard more from the scientific community, I think as a religious community, and even if you're not religious, if you just are tuning in and you saw something about transsexuality and homosexuality, and I think the response is to proceed with love and to proceed in a spirit of listening, of being mm-hmm. willing to listen
mm-hmm.
to someone's experiences. Because you can never point to someone's experience and say, that's not right. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's very important.
What do you think?
Yeah, I would echo that. I think as a whole, we need to come at all of these topics, anything regarding sexuality, as learners and and in a spirit of humility.
Yeah.
And once again, there's so much miscommunication. There's so much presumption, lots of very real, serious, harmful side effects of being uninformed. That it's just. That's part of the reason why I think it was intimidating for us to talk about it. It's intimidating for anyone to talk about it because this is such a, it feels like such a volatile, touchy issue.
Right.
You don't want to say the wrong thing and be branded as a hater, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And so it's,
But Colin, I'm glad you brought that up, mm-hmm. but I would like to say we don't want to let that keep us from learning what's going on.
Absolutely.
And learning to love, and learning where these people are coming from. That we don't want ignorance to keep you from loving someone
Oh, yeah.
in the way that you should love them.
Yeah. And once again, we're back to that question of, okay, well, what does loving them look like?
Right.
And that may be interpreted differently. So I think in summary, if you take nothing else away from today, is really chewing on the question of wherever you are, mm-hmm. whatever your sexual attraction, whatever your sexual orientation, whatever your opinion on any of this is, you need to think long and hard about how do I best love people. Mm-hmm.
And think long and hard before you speak out and say something, before you speak judgment on someone. Mm. That's not to say that speaking judgment on someone is ever a bad thing or a wrong thing, but you need to be well thought out, well prepared, and come from a spirit of love, mm-hmm. not of, I'm going to tell this person what's up.
Right. Right.
I've got a quote by Dietrich Bonhoeffer that I'd love to read and finish this podcast out with, because I think it'll help us a lot with how we should proceed.
Okay, go for it.
So this is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He was a German pastor during World War II. He was actually captured in a plot to assassinate Hitler. A very interesting story, very interesting man. And so this is what he says. And this applies not just to Christians, but to, I think, really everyone. So hear this for what it is and really... try to understand what he's saying here. He says, many people are looking for an ear that will listen. They do not find it among Christians because these Christians are talking where they should be listening. But he who can no longer listen to his brother will soon be no longer listening to God either. He will be doing nothing but prattle in the presence of God too. This is the beginning of the death of the spiritual life. And in the end, there is nothing left. But hear this. This is good. There's nothing left but spiritual chatter and clerical condescension arrayed in pious words. One who cannot listen long and patiently will presently be talking beside the point and be never really speaking to others, albeit he be not conscious of it. Anyone who thinks that his time is too valuable to spend keeping quiet will eventually have no time for God and his brother, but only for himself and his own follies. I want to read one more line. One who cannot listen long and patiently will presently be talking beside the point and be never really speaking to others. I think that really says it all. As a church body, I want to speak to the Christians now specifically who are listening. As a church body, we need to proceed with the spirit of love and listening. That people are not, the way the church has responded to this in the past has really done a disservice to the way people see the church. And that's terrible. If you've had a bad experience with the church, I just want to take the time to apologize to you for that. I'm so sorry. But we want to learn and we want to listen and we want to love. So.
Well, well said. I think that sums it up very well of the essence of speaking well is listening.
Mm-hmm.
And man, that's like, what else can we say?
Yeah.
Just mic drop and we're done.
Well, hey, I tell you what, we'd love to listen to your feedback. Seriously. No, seriously. Colin and I, we need correction in this.
Yes,
at some point we need correction. So if you're hearing this and you think we got it wrong, please tell us, we'll listen. We need
lovingly.
To practice. We'll practice our listening skills for sure. So, hey, thanks for tagging along with us. It was a good conversation. Colin, final thoughts.
This is, once again, this has been our third week of attacking some of the more scientific, biological mm-hmm. science issues. And so as we move forward, we're going to transition into more the philosophy side of things.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited about
hitting
that.
Hitting some of those big questions. So get excited for that, because yes. I know that we are. So yep. I guess we'll see you there.
All right. See you guys.